Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Okay, ready?
Yep. Hello, Egg Chasers. It's the Egg Chasers Rugby Podcast, the podcast about rugby that doesn't take itself or the game too seriously. And this is one of two podcasts in your feed this week because it is Six Nations build-up week. So we have done a Six Nations preview podcast with Scotland and Sail Sharks, Byron McGuigan. Not to be missed. If you haven't already, hit subscribe, hit download on that one. Right now, we're going to run through very quickly the news and the big stories and some of the rumours that are flying around in the rugby week. And I'm doing that, of course. I'm Tim, in the company of JB.
Hello, Timothy.
And in the company of Phil.
Hello, Tim.
From the Rugby Dungeon. We've also got a red card report, some scandal.
Absolute scandal this week.
Some real scandal in lower league rugby. And if you want to get in touch with us on that or anything else for that matter, at Rugby Podcast on Twitter, we have Facebook, Instagram, at Jay Beardmore, if you want to see JB's thoughts and picking up former internationals on their on their attire and the clothing that they wear, for example, this week. You had a little bit of a... You took Brian Moore to task.
Oh, yeah. I was wondering where you're going with this. It's like, what are we talking about? Yeah, I mean, you know, it's ridiculous. You kind of caught me a bit cold here. But yeah, Brian Moore decided to wear a Hammer and Sickle t-shirt, which is about as classy as wearing a swastika or maybe a t-shirt with Pol Pot or Charles Taylor on it. Really.
It's become slightly fashionable to call yourself a communist, hasn't it? There was that woman went on Good Morning Britain and went, "I'm a communist, you idiot."
Yeah, she's pretty hot though, isn't she? To be fair,
but you're right. I think there's a slight bit of ignorance about what communism did. It killed more people than fascism.
Yeah, it's probably second to malaria in terms of the cause of human death.
Yeah,
but no, it's really cool to be wearing it, isn't it? Really cool guy.
Anyway, I didn't mean to go down there, so sorry. Yeah. I'm just saying he was at Jay Beardmore on Twitter. I'm at Cocker. Phil is lurking somewhere.
Always lurking.
On a nondescript Twitter account.
Sliding into your DMs.
Not sliding into anyone's DMs, but lurking. Watching. Waiting.
Right. So we're going to round up the rugby week then. We're not going to Premiership Rugby Cup. Do you want to talk about? Not really.
You covered the Chiefs game, didn't you?
Yeah, I mean, Bristol put out a good side and Exeter put out a pretty good side with a few youngsters, and Bristol still couldn't quite get over the line against Exeter.
How did Ollie Woodburn play first game back?
He got through it this time, which is good.
Good.
Oh, no, actually, I say that. He was sort of looked a bit rough. I think he'll be all right, but I think he might have had a little knock. But yeah, hoping, touch wood, that he's back and fit.
Good, yeah.
Because you care or because you fancy team?
He's not in my fantasy team.
Oh, wow.
Because he's had
genuine compassion from Tim Cocker.
This is his third attempt at starting the season. He keeps coming back and getting injured.
He was phenomenal last year as well.
Wasn't he?
He was on such a good run of form that I was convinced he would at some point be called up for England.
Yeah, it's amazing. Well, you know, we spoke about England last podcast and actually every subsequent podcast since about Christmas. And if you want to know why he's not called up, well, just read between the lines from everything that I say and you'll know.
Yes. So, Premiership Rugby Cup, it looks like Exeter could get a semi-final. Newcastle could pip them to that. Saracens have got themselves a semi-final, and the other semi-finalist probably going to be Worcester. So there you go.
Great news.
That's your semi-finalist. A lot of young players coming through and on show, and I think it highlighted the quality of the squads with some of the players that were named for Saracens and for Exeter.
Yeah. Mm.
There were Pro 14 games as well, and we had the Egg Chaser Bowl.
Yes, we did.
Yes.
JB's beloved Benetton and Phil's beloved Ulster.
I can't believe it. So you know, I thought Benetton wouldn't just beat Ulster. I thought they'd give him an absolute hiding. Ulster got a sneaky way of managing to claw a result from, you know, the jaws of defeat. I mean, they're really quite good at this.
They've got a bit of mental toughness that they haven't had before.
Or they haven't had, certainly, since I started supporting them about 4 years ago. Mm. Before that, obviously, a lot of mental toughness. Since then, they have kind of wilted under pressure a few times.
Say, since you and your frail mentality has met...
My frail mentality. Yeah, my weak-willed.
Yeah, you've kind of meshed with Ulster. You've become one being now, like a hive mind. They've just become weak and frail. Benetton, however... I mean, they have really...
I like where you're going with this. Yeah. Since your enormous intellect and stubbornness, certainly.
Exactly. They just can't lose. They're sitting at second in the table at the moment.
I think if this game was played a couple of years ago, I'm convinced that Ulster would have lost that. Fair play to coming back, but it shouldn't really have been in that position.
No, you should have been down by a lot more.
Yes, possibly.
Yeah, I mean, a lot of people credit Conor O'Shea for what's happening at Benetton, but people who are in the know, they know who really to credit.
And elsewhere in the Pro 14, did the Kings manage to beat Edinburgh?
No, they lost in the last second.
What? I thought they won. I think they won. Yeah, they definitely won, because otherwise Edinburgh would be second, and they're not.
They did. Sorry. I thought I read somewhere that...
It's an outrageous result for Edinburgh.
Yeah.
Because they put out a decent team as well.
But did you see the Kings score, though? They had, like, one try, which will probably go down in history for being so, so nice.
Was that the one in the 77th minute?
Yeah, the offload.
Yes.
Nowhere.
Which was possibly forward. But it was a hell of a try. Yeah. For tries like that. If you've got no skin in the game, for tries like that, just let it go.
Style points.
Yeah.
So, there you go. There's a bit of domestic rugby. We now have... Well, the Premiership Rugby Cup this weekend, there's the other derby games, there's three more fixtures. There's no Pro 14 this weekend, is there? Or is
don't
there?
I don't think know.
No,
so.
There's not.
And we have to wait until the 17th of February for the next Premiership.
So long.
Rugby.
Premiership's so good, and you've got to wait so long for it. It's so wholesome and satisfying.
But then we just got to savour the Six Nations, because you can't have too much of a good thing sometimes. So some of those weekends where you end up, in the autumn, where you end up trying to watch 10 different international matches.
Yeah.
Amazing.
And Premiership games.
So when we first started doing this podcast, right, there was no two ways about it. Six Nations was king. I now think autumn is king. Personally.
Really?
I do. I love the autumn more. I used to hate the autumn as well. I used to really hate it. I thought it was a waste of time. So,
I do enjoy autumn. The problem is, in the Six Nations, every single week there's games that just matter so much. Because you only get the five opportunities to win the damn thing.
Mm.
And you've got... As you always say, you've got all the historic rivalries, the kind of local geographical rivalries. Now, you do get that because, say, England-South Africa or England-New Zealand, those kind of games. Ireland-New Zealand was the biggest game and has been the biggest game for like the last 3 or 4 years in the Autumn Internationals. You do get that kind of thing, but because there's no narrative from week to week other than... The JB Cup, of course.
JB Cup's in play, of course.
But they're not all going for one thing. So I do prefer the Six Nations. I love it.
I love it as well.
Don't get me wrong, I do love it.
As an England fan, I just love how much the other nations love to hate England. It makes it so much more enjoyable for me.
I don't think you're right. I mean, maybe some... I don't know.
Of course they do.
Yeah, I was thinking... Talking
they all them. Do. And I love that.
I was talking from personal experience. I actually think the Irish might soon become the most hated nation.
See, I love to... Maybe it's because I've got the kind of Ulster support. But I love to love the Irish. Because they're such a good team. And they're so well coached. They've got such brilliant leaders.
And I'm going to give you a perfect illustration of this. So what I understand to be the case in the... What World Cup was it? 2011 World Cup, when there was the dwarf tossing incident in a bar.
Oh, yeah.
Yes.
What I understand to have happened was England were in there, dwarf tossing, getting hammered, kissing girls, pictured in tabloids and stuff.
Mm.
And that was horrible news and they brought the game into disrepute.
Yes.
Apparently, so I understand, Ireland were there only days before and...
Dwarf tossing?
were up to all sorts of shenanigans, and everyone loved them.
Hang on,
because it was Ireland.
Are you retrospectively snitching?
No, I'm highlighting. What a grass. I'm highlighting the world's attitude to England.
This is unbelievable. When England, you're grassing up the Ireland team from 5 years
they
ago.
They got away with it for so long.
They got away with it.
Eight years.
They got to hold them to account.
8 years.
No, I'm just saying that is that is the world's attitude to England, and you
sounds
know
like it's deserved.
It makes it all the more enjoyable for me. That's why I love the Six Nations rivalries. Exactly as Phil said, they just come around once every now and again. I see that they've tried to do that with the Premiership Rugby Cup with the Derby weekends, and that's added a little element. You know, you got the King of the North this weekend, Steve Diamond versus Dean Richards.
Yep. I mean, it's obvious who would win that one. Yeah, great. I mean, it's hard to get excited.
That would be a good even fight. That one, actually.
I don't know.
Dean's a big boy. His fists are about the size of my head.
Yeah, he's a big. So, do you think that big fists result in harder punches?
You're spreading the force over a greater surface area.
Correct. That's always what I've thought. So you know when people say, oh yeah, he's got a big fist? I'm like, well, that's no good because, you know.
You've got tiny little fists, yeah, but lots of force behind them.
You want stiletto fists, right?
But also, you need mass as well, though.
No, this is the other part, right? Because you want
mass times force. No.
Force equals mass times acceleration.
Yeah.
So I'm just, yeah, I'd love to know what the equation is. Is there an optimum size of hand?
Well, you know, really, really dense, so small, but weigh a
small
lot.
Small stiletto-shaped hands is what you want.
Heavy, made of lead.
Yeah, made of lead.
Yeah. Interesting, though, isn't it?
Boxers have massive hands, don't they?
Well, that's what they always say. Like, he's got, like, massive hands, you know, you could punch through walls, blah, blah, blah. I think that doesn't make sense to me.
So this is like the sort of fighting equivalent of how much wood can a woodchuck chuck. It's like a... We need some scientists to actually work this out.
Exactly. Please. Right.
So we get on the case. Right. So there's been all sorts of rumours flying around this week.
Hasn't there just?
I mean, it must have come as a surprise to you when you woke up one morning to find that Joe Launchbury was rumoured to be going to Sail Sharks, Jay.
Goodness me. I
mean, rumoured to be at Sail Sharks that very day.
That's a bizarre accusation. Because he's in Portugal.
He was in Portugal.
Like, who would publish that story without doing their
Hang on a minute. So when I heard that, I've got to say, I was genuinely intrigued. And also, yeah, I think it'd be a great signing for any club, Sale included. And actually, you know, his name has been linked to Sale quite a lot. Turns out that isn't the case, though.
So then why was he named as being in Manchester when he was actually training in Portugal? And named as being about to sign for Sale Sharks when he's come out and said there was no interest.
I just guess some people got it wrong. But on the other hand, he has...
I always think, what's the story behind the story?
There's always a story behind the story, isn't there? I would just say that he'd be a fantastic signing for anyone. I can't see him re-signing for Wasps.
A lock is definitely someone that Sale Sharks would need.
Yeah, they've been after a world-class lock for ages.
So...
I mean, apparently they've got a couple coming.
Is there a good world-class lock that Joe Launchbury looks like that he could have been mistaken for?
Not that I know of. But yeah, I mean, Sale need a world-class lock. They've openly stated they're after one. Joe Launchbury fits that profile. Makes sense that, you know, that might be linked.
Other rumours, London Irish opening the checkbook for... It looks like
now, these are fascinating rumours.
Paddy Jackson for eye-watering amounts of money. Adam Coleman, the Australia lock, for eye-watering amounts of money. Latest rumour, Waisaki Naholo.
That would be a hell of a signing, especially for your fantasy rugby draft team. But we were having the debate before the pod about value in signings and whether locks represent value. Certainly the money that's being talked around for some locks, and we'll come on to Mario Itoje in a short while. But... wingers as well. So you need great finishers. You need people who can consistently get over the gain line. But is the drop-off that great to justify spending as much as is being kind of talked about?
I actually think wing is one of the places where you could get value. The reason being is they get the ball so infrequently. Like when they do, you need to do something immediately. You've got to do something. Not everyone can. And also... look at the example Bristol set. I think Moynihan at Bristol is probably worth, you know, 5 or 6 league points for for them because he can finish. And Pietau, I thought that was a horrible signing. Like, loads of money for something you don't need. A luxury, frankly. But no, I was completely wrong on that, too.
Well, Pietau is an interesting one because he is... I love Pietau.
Yeah.
Absolutely love him.
I haven't actually played much yet.
Is he worth £1 million? He's alleged. Is he worth 800 to £1 million?
Well, the original thought was not to Bristol. Yeah. So yes, he is worth £1 million to somebody, but not to Bristol. Again, I think I might be wrong on that because I think the way Bristol play, it looks like he'd be perfect for them.
He is perfect. He fits right into that Pat Lam philosophy. Now,
I would ask another question, right, which is if you look at the players linked with Irish, if Paddy Jackson wasn't available in the way that he is, would he be worth nearly that amount? I don't think so.
Well, so he would be because you'd have be having to prize him away from Ireland. So he would command arguably a higher salary because he would be unavailable.
But there is no way on earth, right? Paddy, I mean, what is Paddy Jackson? He's
26.
26. And in terms of the quality of play he provides you with, I mean, would he be a top five fly half in the Premiership?
Not far off.
Yeah, I think he would be. The
fact he's available 22 rounds, as long as he stays fit, 22 rounds of Premiership games, that's in a World Cup year as well, huge.
It's the rarity, isn't it, of being able to get a guy and be able to shell out money to get a guy.
Yeah.
Because they're all tied up. I guess that's the big difference.
Yeah.
I mean, but I don't think he's any better than AJ McGinty, frankly. In fact, I think he's worse. I actually think he's much worse.
So I think he's.
You're wrong.
You're very, very
100% wrong.
Our opinion's wrong.
Yes. There are all wrong opinions.
Let's not forget in the Chicago New Zealand win, that autumn, wasn't he the backup?
No, Corby was.
I can't remember then.
I'm thinking of the autumn before.
Yeah, he was actually pushing Sexton when he was.
Yes, that's right.
Only kind of 23, 24.
I don't think he's ever really pushed Sexton.
He was close.
He established himself, and it was the first time that Sexton's been the fly half when we were able to say Sexton gets injured. Obviously, they're going to miss him. However, they've got someone who can come in and do a job.
Maybe because he's been at the international pitches for so long.
Yeah.
I might not be remembering it quite correctly. I do think it was more Ireland wishing and pushing him and hoping he would be a reasonable number two because they're so dependent on Sexton. Either way, he's available. I think if they get him for 600k, it's not a good way to spend your money. There are better ways to do it.
I think that kind of money for... Because there are so few available players that can do what he can do.
Would you bet the Madigan?
Oh, yeah.
Yes.
Definitely.
The Madigan must be on some good money.
Yeah. Madigan will be on good money. Yeah. Jackson is worth it for me.
I would spend that money on Paddy Jackson. I'm not going to get into the other stuff that some people would start piping up about. As a rugby player, 100% he is worth that. Bearing in mind he's going to be available... As long as he stays fit, 22 rounds of Premiership. That's massive. And every side that's gone down has had a big hole at fly half. And Newcastle are there.
Who's the best fly half to go down? Carlos Spencer?
No, he signed afterwards. Andrew Mertens,
yeah.
That's a good shout.
Wow.
Generally, look at Newcastle now. Joel Hodgson was the in-form number one fly half at Newcastle. Gets injured. Toby Flood's been in and out of four-man injury. And look where they are.
Yep.
Yeah, they're struggling.
Who was Northampton's fly half then when they went down?
When
Grayson? Would he still been playing? Oh, 2000.
Grayson was no.
Grayson, I believe.
Well, Ray Harner was playing. He was wing or fullback.
I think Grayson and Budge Pountney were the coaches that sent them down, if I remember correctly. And I often do remember correctly, just saying. And Wayne Smith was the coach before those two.
I don't remember who the fly off was then.
No.
Shane Drawn?
No, he was at Bristol, wasn't he?
No, he did Worcester and he did Northampton.
Shane Drawn was definitely at Bristol. I played against him.
Really?
Yeah.
Shane Drawn was like Waratahs.
I'm going to check this. I'm sure I played against him. I'm sure he was in the team when I played against Bristol in a pre-season game.
So, no, because he would have come over from Waratahs. He went to Northampton, then went to... Maybe he had a spell at Bristol, but he definitely did Worcester.
Shane Drum, let's have a look.
He definitely did Northampton.
I'm sure I played against him. He was in the same team with Bristol Shoguns. There you go. Oh. 70 appearances for Bristol Shoguns.
Oh, so quite a lot of appearances.
9 appearances for Northampton.
And Worcester?
Not. It doesn't tell me how many. Hold on. What?
Huh?
No, this must be all wrong, because this says two England appearances.
Shane Drom?
That's got to be absolute bollocks.
That would be astounding. And was he not...
Drom qualified to represent England on residency grounds and was capped twice in 2006. That cannot be real.
Wow.
Shane Drom did not play for England.
Sounds like he did, mate. I wonder if it was Churchill Cup.
Wow. But I did definitely play against him. He played in that team. Sorry, I'm not name dropping. He played in this. I got absolutely ruined playing opposite Ben Sternham.
The Saints squad for Premiership in 2006-2007, which was the season they got relegated. Carlos Spencer was there. So I wonder if he joined partway through the season.
Maybe.
Anyway, it's him or Mertens. Yeah. To answer the original question before we got slightly distracted.
London Irish are chucking crazy cash around. I think it's a smart move from them because they are... I mean, I don't think Adam Coleman's smart money.
It depends how much it is. Depends how much they're spending. It's all about value.
If the numbers that I'm hearing are... but then I'm not sure it is. But they need quality players. And what's more, I think if they make a statement with their signings and make an impact in the way that Bristol have, then... it makes those conversations about ring fencing much, much more likely to happen. Which is in their interests, if not.
Yeah, those conversations will just continue to happen. Yeah. There was some other news this week. There was a few signings or re-signings. So Exeter have done a fair bit of business. Some of their kind of key stars, key homegrown and brought in talent.
Whilst we
re-signing.
Were on the podcast last week, that
there was a couple
news bust open
last week. Itoje has re-signed this week in one of the most interesting stories of the week, purely because of the number that's been thrown around.
Yeah, so tell me what the number is, because I don't know anything about the number.
The number that I've read in a couple of places, and it's one of these where if someone says it normally gets kind of parroted around. The number, take it with a pinch of salt, is between £750,000 and £1 million, which is...
per year.
Per year, which is phenomenal. Now, obviously for that, he would be their marquee player, or one of their two marquee players, alongside maybe Owen Farrell, maybe Billy Vunipola, Vincent Cock.
Oh, God.
Aside from his... playing on the field, which no one will dispute is immense. Can they monetize him?
Well,
can they claw some of that back?
Yes, it should be the answer.
Because I know he has endorsements with Adidas, with Vitality, with all sorts of people. So he'll make as much again in endorsements, I imagine.
In endorsements and then obviously his England appearances.
How much of him do they own?
Don't know.
That's don't know, because,
do they get a cut of the Adidas money, for example? I don't know.
So for example, there are certain clubs in the Premiership who are accused at the moment of not paying their image rights. Now that tells me that the clubs are buying the players' image rights to sell. But does that mean that, say, for instance, a Sale Sharks, does that mean that they
could just to pick any team?
Well, yeah, right. Does that mean that they can get their players and say, hey, if you do a deal with Sale Sharks, we'll throw Chris Ashton on your front cover? Or or does that mean that every time Chris Ashton does a deal that they get...
I think that might be part of it. When you sign a corporate deal with a client, a sponsor or a client or something, you will have written into the contract X number of player appearances, things like that. Yeah. We will supply a player at every... to come around and visit your table in your corporate hospitality box at every home game.
But then how does it interact with the England cash? Because, if you're in England, England will obviously want to put their stars into places too.
And England have their own sponsors, which players get a cut of. And what, my point being, Maro Itoje will be an unbelievably independently wealthy man if that number is correct or not.
I suppose the other thing is, would you go to a stadium to watch Maro play?
I think he will. So the way I was going to address that first question was, I think Maro alone, even taking other people out of that team, other big star names, I think he will attract people to the game because he is he's talented and marketable.
So imagine that you're a young kid.
Yeah.
And your hero is Maro, or you've heard of Maro and you think, oh yeah, I really want to watch him play. If you watched him play, I don't think you would come away thinking Maro is my hero. You might think Alex Good's my hero. or Owen Farrell. But like Mario doesn't do that sort of thing.
It's, he does. He does not the same as some, but he does it more than just about any other lock.
Yeah, any other lock.
I mean, he's got a 50 meter try the other day, ripped the ball off a player midfield and just gallops in.
Yeah.
How many other players do that?
It's kind of like, let me put it another way. It's like paying an offensive lineman in the NFL big bucks. They're absolutely worth it for the team. They're worth it for, you know, how successful the team is going forward, and that drives the crowd. But nobody goes to an NFL game to watch the offensive line play. And I kind of think that's the same with Mario.
Well, I'll put it like this, in that sense. I was thinking about this the other day when I was thinking about this podcast and getting nostalgic about the Six Nations. Six Nations used to be on one of the terrestrial channels when there was only four television channels.
Mm.
When there was no Netflix, no Amazon Prime, nothing like that, no YouTube. So there were four things you could watch on a screen, visually, and rugby was on one of them.
Yeah.
That was massive. As a result, if you asked anybody that isn't a massive rugby fan, name a rugby player, they will say Will Carling.
Yeah.
Brian Moore, Johnny Wilkinson.
Guscott.
Brian Moore.
Guscott. Yeah, they'll say names that they remember either from the 2003 World Cup, and that one's probably only Martin Johnson and Johnny Wilkinson.
Yeah.
Or they'll name people from the era when rugby was on the telly when there was only four channels. Maro Itoje is probably the only modern player that the average non-rugby fan might have seen or heard of. That's it. That probably says everything about what's he worth? Because yes, he has a market value to potential clients for Saracens that is over and above any other player.
That must be
by
a responsibility, you know, because
yeah.
If you're not particularly chatty, and I don't know if he is or not. I mean,
intellectual.
Have you ever heard him? Have you ever spoke to him?
I've interviewed him like post-match interviews a few times. He's got a very confident, laid-back swagger.
Yeah, I've never really heard him speak.
I've heard a couple of interviews. I think I've heard you interviewing him, Tim. But he always comes across as, yeah, I think calm.
Calm, confident, like an animal on the field, but a very calm, cerebral bloke of it.
Yeah, so what I was going to say is a lot of responsibility because like, if you just happen to be a phenomenal rugby player, it must be very hard then to turn into corporate mode and then go and hobnob and be expected to publicly speak and be the face of Vitality and the face of the club.
Well, doing those model shoots with that woman on the beach.
Yeah, that looks tough.
I tell you who kind of really epitomises that is Owen Farrell. For as important as he is, he's rubbish at that kind of... I mean, I'm not saying he's absolutely rubbish, but he doesn't like doing it.
He doesn't like doing it, no.
Yeah.
He'd rather just focus on the rugby. And I'm sure Maro and all players would. But anyway, that was my general
point.
No, not
all players.
No, not all players. But that was my point linking in with the Six Nations is he is actually one... There's not... I can't think of another rugby player which non-rugby fans would know.
Johnny Wilkinson would be the next one.
Well, no, exactly, yeah. But currently playing.
Yeah.
Who's currently playing that non-rugby players would know? And this is a genuine thing I think we need to confront as rugby. Yeah. Because...
You were in your stripes.
No, totally. But what I mean is, always remember how small rugby actually is.
Yeah. Well, we say that... Rugby's got a problem in that we are trying to reach new markets and yet nobody in rugby seems to appreciate the different ways to which you reach new markets. I think some of the clubs are getting it. But in general, the way that rugby is communicated through the media, it's just not good enough. And that's why it's not getting to new markets, because people can't get the information. The information they do get is all rather samey and it's all kind of, you know, it's all rather bland.
And I guess my point on that would be, actually, before we start going, right, let's go and crack China... And I'd sort of go, hold on, could we get domestic club crowds up to 20,000 rather than 10,000?
Mm.
And that doubles the scale of the game in the UK.
Yeah, I think I honestly think rugby is a communication issue. We need to showcase it. The sport itself doesn't need any more showcasing. Doesn't need any more fireworks, doesn't need any more rule changes. You just need to get more eyeballs on it. And you
a bit
need
more
to
DJ Spoonie wouldn't go amiss.
You know what? That's probably not a bad idea. But can you imagine the powers that be? I mean, they don't even like it when the kickoff moves from 3 o'clock, let alone when DJ Spoonie moves in. It's a communication through the media. The media just do not do a very good job of promoting rugby because most of the time they're whinging about it rather than, you know, doing... Well, actually, that's not a good example. But doing what the NFL does... and the people who cover the NFL, who are basically always saying what a great product it is. You never get that in rugby. It's always negative.
So from one re-signing in Mauro Itoje, one of the world's most valuable players, certainly by the kind of speculated value of his most recent contract, to another incredibly valuable player.
Incredibly valuable.
As JB pointed out on Twitter. And that was the enormous news that Will Cliff.
Yeah.
You must be delighted, JB,
yes,
as a sale fan.
I think certainly a guy who would be putting pressure to start in any other club, you said he would start in most clubs.
Was that most other clubs?
Is that most if you take the most to be the majority of all English rugby clubs,
he would get
Premiership alone?
He would get a lot more starts if he was not behind the best scrum half in the world.
So, just on your original point, as Tim has just said. Do you think he would start for most other clubs?
I think he could start a lot of games. Yes,
he could start. are you just practicing to be a politician here?
Could
we just add? Right. So this is the thing, JB. Just... I understand you have a great relationship with Sale Sharks, and I think that's fantastic.
Oh, thanks, Tim. thanks, mate.
But if you make statements like and Will Cliff, solid squad player.
Could get a lot of starts elsewhere.
Good bloke. could get starts elsewhere,
I agree.
But when you say statements like he would start for most other clubs...
Well, look, he signed as a starter. And, you know, then Sale landed Faf de Klerk. Otherwise, he would be starting. And I think, you know...
So which scrum halves would he start ahead of?
All of them.
Kobus Rylak?
All of them. He's not in those situations, so it'd be impossible to sell. But if he was...
Richard Wigglesworth?
If he was competing with Nick White...
Ben Youngs
would certainly... Well, he'd certainly be...
Danny Kerr?
Be feeling the heat left, right and centre. They'd all be feeling heat.
Okay. One other scrum off that got mentioned this week by Eddie Jones in the press conference is Harry Randall of Bristol.
Mm.
He didn't actually name him. He said, oh, they'd go out from Bristol. he could be one for the future. Mate.
Which means he probably is.
Yeah.
I mean, as much as I slate Eddie Jones for various things, mostly, or sometimes unfairly.
He likes going through scrum halves.
But he also loves spotting young talent.
Yeah.
He's bloody brilliant at that. So if Eddie says he's going to be a good player, my guess is he will be.
Yeah, you must be disappointed Marcus Smith isn't in the Six Nations squad, given he's going to be starting for England in the World
Cup.
Yeah.
He's got a lot of work to do. A lot of work to do.
A little bit of work to do.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And is all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Right, I'll tell you what. Going on when you said, you talked about the sort of negativity around rugby, that JB, that actually links in a little bit with one story. And you were talking about how to grow the game, to have a bit more positivity and stuff. One blight on rugby over the last few years, and it's been building and building.
Is it Twitter?
It has been building and building on Twitter as much as anywhere else. all of the politics and the scandal around the tackle height and high tackles and concussions and the like. And we've seen the RFU put into place an experiment to try and alter the tackle height. And I just want to take people back to when this was announced and in the Championship Cup, it was announced what we said about this, where they were going to say tackle height was going to be lowered, so it's chest height, nipple height, rather than neck height. What did we say unanimously?
Increase concussions, please.
we said it would increase concussions yeah. due to the law of unintended consequences.
So I didn't say it would increase concussions. I said I would be interested to see what happens.
Because you're far wiser.
And I would be worried about potential unintended consequences.
Okay. I never said that, actually. I said it would hands down result in more head injuries. Now, there is actually conflicting evidence on this. Okay, so...
Oh, so if you haven't seen the story, yes, the RFU have now scrapped that for the knockout stages because the evidence from the pool stages is that it's nearly doubled the level of concussion.
It was a 67% increase.
67% increase.
Okay. From an average of 0.6 per game to an average of one concussion per game.
And the way that the concussions have been being caused is what they were concerned about was two high players, a high ball carrier and a high tackle, clashing heads. By lowering the tackle height, what they've done is made collisions with two players bent at the waist much more prominent. And when they've analysed game footage, what they've found is that the body height of tacklers is lower, and as a result, because it's instinctive, you want to kind of fend, and you don't then want to just like run with your waist at someone's shoulder.
How do you think?
So you don't want to run with your waist at someone's shoulder. So the ball carrier is dropping their height to meet the meat and potatoes of the player, and as a result, head collisions at a lower height.
Yeah, agreed. I actually think high tackles are probably good for the game. Bear with me.
Interesting.
What I mean by that is when I play rugby, I'm a naturally high tackler. I don't get in a good body position. I tend to tackle high and wrap high. And as a result, I don't hit particularly hard, and I certainly don't damage myself. I don't mean high shots as in, you know, swinging arm around the head. I naturally tackle around chest height. I don't actually think that's a terrible thing. I think when you get really good tacklers going low, like you've explained to him, you do get this thing when there's like competing body heights. Now, as a high tackler, I'm never going to compete on a body type. I'm probably going to wrap around the waist. I'm probably going to from a standing position around the waist and give up the game line. What will happen is exactly as you've said. These players will just continually go lower and lower and lower, and there's nowhere else to go. You will be causing more collisions. And we said that. And the reason we said that is because we know rugby. We've played rugby multiple years.
And it's also like the anatomy of a human body. And we've played rugby, and we understand. I would never ever want to leave my solar plexus open for someone to smash. Yeah. Because it's where all my internal organs are. It's where all my most vulnerable and softest parts
nice
of my
bit,
body
nice
are.
Nice soft bit.
Lovely
yeah.
soft bit. So,
those enticing ribs, Tim. Ooh, yeah. I can just see them.
If someone goes for that, I think it's probably millions of years of evolution as much as 20-odd years playing rugby. It's I'm going to get my forearm and my shoulder in the way of the part of the tackler and drop it lower
and
to stop my solar plexus.
Defender, you know, there's nothing you really want more than a high tackler because you can get a hand into their chest and then get around them or create the weak shoulder. You know, it's a nightmare when you get a really good tackler, he gets underneath you, and then he lifts you from the ground. And I don't mean in a dump tackle way. So you've got no purchase on your feet, and then you start getting marched backwards because you're almost tipping, like your centre of gravity has been tipped backwards. It's a nightmare. You can't do a single thing about it. So you're almost legislating. You're almost making it legislate. So I'll give you another example of this. So the most effective version, the most dangerous version of the tackle is now how people tackle. And I'll give you another example of this. They wanted to depower the driving more. So what they said is, when you all gather around into the maul, you can't move back yourself. You've got to pass the ball back. Moving back is easier, but passing the ball back creates a stronger maul. It's harder to do. So statistically, it is less likely to result in a successful maul. But if you get it right, it's actually a more powerful way to do it. So they've legislated a weaker way of mauling, which people do because it's easier, in order to get a stronger maul. Actually, the legislation makes teams better mauling teams. Does that make sense? It is the exact opposite to what they intended.
But it is actually good, as in it's being used to effect. It's creating more stable but stronger mauls, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
So mauls are less likely. So it's had the opposite effect, but that has had unintended consequences of being opposite, but has actually had the intended consequence of making it more stable, therefore it's safer.
Does that make sense? I'm not sure if it was a safety thing. I think it was they wanted to depower
style,
them all.
Style of game thing.
Yeah, I thought they wanted to depower them
so
all.
So why are they if that was the case, how come they've not done anything more to try and change the change?
The people that make the laws, okay, the panels of experts, and by the way, they're the only people that are winning. The people, the legions of people employed to be experts and then parade around podcasts to tell us things we already knew. They don't then go back and look at this and go, oh, by the way, the mall is actually more powerful.
And the people on Twitter who get to tell it, sit righteously and tell us why we're wrong for criticising meddling with the laws.
Yeah. So there's a certain thing, isn't there, when you get into a Twitter argument and people don't even bother arguing with you. Link, let me see your evidence. I've stopped doing that now because I know what I know, and that will be that.
Well, you are talking about the experts. So you have read the World Rugby analysis on this, haven't you?
Of course not. Why would I bother? Because I know what I know. I'll give you another example. Okay, New Zealand came out with a report the other day because school participation is
declining school participation in rugby union.
Yeah, I do not need to pick up that report because as soon as I read the words inclusivity and accessibility, we can basically throw it in the bin because these things weren't even around when people were all playing rugby.
Do you know who was on the panel of experts?
For which, Jake? To make the who's who.
Yes.
The who's who, yeah.
So when you're flippantly throwing around these experts, it was current former players, current and former coaches.
This is the World Rugby.
This is the World Rugby trying to make the decision, which led to the RFU Championship Cup trial in this.
I don't mind the trial. I don't mind the trial. I'm glad it's been lobbed out for the group stages.
Yeah. So the trial's great. It's the being flippant around the process that they've got to this decision around, that frustrates me a little bit because people are genuinely doing this for the right reasons.
Are they, though?
Well, so have you read the report?
No.
So what do you think? What do you think? Yes. So what do you think the reasons that they're trying to do it for are for?
I think you're not going to find this in the paper, but certainly for concussions, they are doing it to show they've made proactive steps in order to avoid a huge lawsuit.
So one part of it is lawsuit. The other side of exactly that point is to make it safer, to stop people from getting concussions. And you might be cynical and say, yeah, lawsuit, you might take it the positive way and say, yes, we want to make it safer.
Yeah, but this is insane. I mean, if you want to make it safer, I mean, we're three guys in a basement, and we can tell you right now, without any without any scientific background, that will make it more...
Three virgins in a living room.
Yeah, three virgins in a bedroom. Right? And I can tell you, before it even happened, that's going to result in more concussions. I didn't need to write a paper.
So, you say more concussions. What happened on the first time this study was done?
Well, this is interesting. So the under-20s, apparently, didn't actually come up with the same results.
Correct. It had almost exactly the opposite result. They were reduced to the tune of about 2/3. So we've had two very small sample sizes of study, 136 games, 130 game, both having completely opposite results, both within what would expected to be normal standard deviations. Now, interestingly, so me looking at this, I think we can't draw any conclusive results from this, exactly as you're trying to do, because they're far too small.
Yeah.
One thing I would say that is would suggest the movement in both directions is in the under-20s World Cup, they would have been training and playing that game, those rules entirely. In the Premiership Rugby Cup, you'd go from 1 week playing old rules to another week playing new rules, training in both directions. That's never going to help. That is going to cause confusion.
That's fair.
But I just don't like the idea of using this to prove a point,
yes,
a narrative,
yes,
in either direction. I don't think you should do it. I think we need to try and do this kind of stuff. I think we should endeavour to make the game safer. And I'm not talking about...
All right, do you know what? I think you're right. And not wanting to get into the discussion, but the lack of nuance in political discussions, for example, at the minute, especially on Twitter. Go for it, Jay. if people that have a strong opinion about Brexit, for example, take any... take any bit of evidence. They ignore the they ignore things which show a contrary point of view, and they amplify anything which backs up what they've already predetermined their decision was.
I don't like that scenario.
And that in this scenario is wrong. And so, yeah, you're right. Nuance is important, and because there is nuance, and there is two things be true.
Look, I just think there is a process, and the process always skews to one. The only thing which surprised me about this study is that it actually came out with something which I agree with. Other than that, I was almost certain. So, you know, that kind of cuts in their favour. But almost every study about rugby has come out unanimously to the way that I would expect it to. And you can almost prejudge what they're going to say. I mean, like the New Zealand one, which I wanted to talk about before, that is clearly and obviously wrong. You know, it isn't about accessibility, and it isn't about
the numbers of school children.
Yeah.
So I saw that study, and again, it's like that story had such, and that analysis of that data had such a lack of nuance. It's like they haven't factored in a multitude of other possible reasons why the amount of rugby union has declined in schools. It was people that had we believe this already. There's that number. We can make that fit. What we want to say, inclusivity, accessibility.
Exactly.
That's it.
Here's some buzzwords. Can you make it more inclusive, please?
It could be there's been a massive push from football as a union to try and get more people participating. That's going to take kids from somewhere. So who knows? And the point is there's multi-factor ways of looking at all this.
Isn't that the whole point of rugby? It is inclusive.
It's one of the reasons why we love it.
I mean, I play it. Phil plays it. We are, if you look at us, totally different body shapes. There are men far, far taller, far, far broader than me, far smaller than me. You know, that is, it's about as inclusive as it gets. Of course, we're not talking about that type of inclusivity. That takes us down a different rabbit hole.
Nonsense. And if you want to talk about it, it is a potential curveball, which I think could affect rugby union moving forward and linking in this concussion thing and the story from New Zealand about a lower participation in rugby union in general, is that how soft parents are now, how protective and how like helicopter parents who try and avoid any risk with their kids. I see it with my kids' friends. What age were you when you walked to the shop to go and get a pint of milk and had to cross a few roads?
18, 19.
I remember
you're a special case though, JP.
I remember being six.
Yeah.
Five,
God,
six,
I wasn't,
six,
I definitely
seven.
Wasn't that young. I lived a long way from a shop.
Yeah.
Nine, certainly.
You go and play in the woods.
Eight, nine, you go
to the park and have a kick around and be gone all day and go back for tea. Yeah. That whole, the way that, this has gone broader than I wanted to. But the point is that's going to affect rugby union massively when you look at the safety in rugby combined with the whole way that kids are parented. They're wrapped in cotton wool, that they don't go to the park with their mates on their own. So, God, a lot of parents are never going to let their kids on a rugby field.
Ridiculous.
Because there's a risk involved.
Yeah.
Can't possibly have a risk.
Yeah. So, you know, you can sort of guess what these things are going to say before they come out. But in fairness, this study.
So that's an interesting question, actually. Because, so, I know you are very cynical about experts.
Very.
And I know you were very cynical about this whole
Except
study.
For my expertise, I might add.
Yes. Yeah.
Ironically.
Yeah. You are the ultimate technocrat in everything.
Exactly.
Having seen that it has given a result, or certainly this element of the trial has given a result, which is contrary to what you would have expected the people running the result, running the test would have wanted, does that at least give you some confidence in the process? Because that's, I do actually have some confidence that these things are being done for the right reason.
I know. Yes, sort of. Is the answer.
Which in my mind is a step in the right direction.
It is, because I now know that, you know, it might actually come to some reasonable conclusion. Whereas before I was totally convinced this is going down, you know, one road and it's one way with no return.
Good. I am glad you're at least moving in that direction.
So now we've established that I am an expert.
In conclusion,
if there is one thing to take out of this podcast, it is JB's level of expertise in everything,
exactly.
No matter how ill-informed he is on that subject.
Correct. So we've got experts to look at, you know, categorised tackles, and Bernard Lepore is talking about banning two-man tackles now, and you know, there's a lot of change in the game. And someone I spoke to the other day only wanted to go down to, you know, wanted to drop an extra man, so it goes down to a 14-man game. There's been talk of removing flankers from scrums. By the way, that's a controversy that disappeared. Remember when the scrum was the second most powerful thing after the Large Hadron Collider? I mean, that seems to have disappeared completely, that chat now. Scrums are now completely safe.
I would go back down to maybe three or four subs.
Yeah, three or four changing subs.
How else can you keep the ball in play more?
Ooh.
I don't know. For example, I would get rid of just little things like we talked last week. Stop the lengthening, like make refs enforce to use it, get the ball gone.
Yep.
Quick gone. Speed the game up so that you have to slim down your body weight, which provides less mass for huge collisions.
So the speeding the game up and having the ball in play more is quite interesting, because some of the law changes that they've introduced over the last kind of 5 to 10 years have led to that. So there's a significant increase, 20% increase, I can't remember the exact period of time, in ball in play time, which has led to a significant increase in tackles, which you would expect. So the article I was reading flagged this as a paradox. So you'd expect 20% more ball into play time, 20% more tackles to lead to a 20% increase in injury rates, which it actually hasn't. The injury rates have stayed flat. There is an increase in concussions, partly potentially due to just general awareness. But that's quite an interesting paradox that while the ball's in play more and you're getting more tackles, there hasn't been an increase.
Someone mentioned this to me on Twitter, and I thought it was a really fair point, because it's not something I'd thought of. I assumed that you had ball in play more, you got fitter players, smaller collisions, that kind of thing. More like, I guess, Aussie rules, that sort of thing, where you know the body shapes are getting more and more athletic. So fortunately, I do have a solution for this. I've only been talking about it for 5 years. So let's get rid of the knock-on.
So in the same way that these are trialed, I'd love to see it trialed.
I wonder, could we actually make this happen?
Yeah, so
we've been talking about it since
I know.
The first time JB mentioned it, me and Phil laughed our heads off.
Yeah.
Then we sat with it and thought with it for a bit and thought, you know what? There's actually some sense in this.
And talk through, because you keep the deliberate knock-on as...
Yellow card. Bye.
Yeah.
Or penalty.
Because when I've been discussing this with people, a lot of their immediate reactions... David Flatman was exactly the same when we were discussing it with him. His immediate reaction was, well, what's to stop you just like throwing the ball forward or intentionally doing it? Well, first of all, there's the deliberate knock-on. Secondly, you can do pretty much that with a grubber kick,
yep,
which is very effective, but teams don't do it all the time.
Forward pass law stays exactly as it is. Yep. Forward pass is still a scrum.
But accidental knock-ons, play on, you could have a caveat, which is unless it immediately leads to a try.
I mean, which is one of the things you did.
Okay, so you can use the lines. You could say knock-ons do still count in the 22s. So if you're attacking...
Oh, I don't like that.
That change in law depending on where you are on the pitch.
I don't like
the mark. Because the mark does that.
But when that happens, it is... So that and kicking for touch out of the 22,
yep,
there is normally no one else around. So it's a very simple scenario that the ref's looking at.
Yeah.
In what you're describing,
if
would be a very complicated...
Over the 22 or over the 5 metre. If it's a knock-on, it's over the 5 metre.
Point is, if it's accidental, stopping the game, having a scrum, there's maybe a minute and a half. If there's a couple of reset scrums, you could even have as much as 3 minutes.
More,
because
yeah,
someone's just knocked it on. Actually, first dive on the ball, reset, yeah, off you
and
go.
You know, if you're really worried about maintaining...
It's like a fumble in American football.
Yeah, so the most simple version of it is there are zero knock-ons, exactly as you said, Tim. There's a fumble in the NFL. There is an NFL team in the world that wants its running backs to fumble the ball.
Yeah.
In fact, you lose your job for fumbling the ball. So the idea it rewards talentless players just isn't correct.
It's
just
nonsense.
It's not correct.
Because you will be knocking the ball towards the opposition.
Yeah.
So you...
And it's a turnover.
Well, it's just you're... if you do it deliberately, then it's a penalty.
Yeah, yellow
card.
If
you do it accidentally, you have no control over where that's happening.
And the ball will be rolling towards the opposition.
So this sounds ridiculous, but I genuinely would love... Can we leverage our influence to try and get someone to even consider it?
No, because we're not experts. We need to convene a panel of at least 80 experts, and then get several academics. And they can only actually do it once they've toured various podcast studios.
Would you be willing to just let some other expert have this, as have their name on it, and get all the glory?
No. I mean, that is one thing I'm very strict on. I think it has to be named after me in some way.
Yeah, like the JB Cup.
Exactly right, exactly right. Other than that, they can do what they want. I mean, I'm happy to let them play with the rules. Another rule would be, if you knock it on, maybe all of your players are offside if you touch that ball until the opposition touch it.
So, players offside is a...
You know, there is loads of variations for it.
Because that would just be a normal offside law.
Yeah.
Because, like, if you kick and someone's in front of you, you are offside.
Exactly.
That just stays exactly the same.
If you knock it on and one of your players touches it first, then it's a knock-on. Although you wouldn't want a weird, like, Mexican standoff. So, like, you know, you could have a situation where you knock it on and you go, guys, the ball's there! And, you know, you sort of organise your back line because you know the opposition can't touch it.
So that does happen. It's still in games. If the accidental offside law, if a player goes for it when they're offside...
But in its most simple form, I think we could increase the ball in play time. I mean, imagine 5 minutes.
Decrease the number of scrums.
Yeah. But mind you, that's not even an issue anymore, is it? When's the last time you heard someone win?
Well, no.
Scrum?
No. There's much less scrums than there were. But the amount...
Sorry, I mean, like, injuries in the scrum. Because that used to be
Not injuries, but the amount of... Like, scrums... If you look at the old videos, and I'm not saying it should be like the old days. I understand why they changed the process in the scrum to make it safer, and that has worked. Crouch, touch, all that, bind and gate, whatever it is. I get it. And that's fine. However, it takes a minute or... a minute and a half. You have 10 scrums a game. That is 1/8 of your game gone. Assuming there's no resets.
Yeah. You're absolutely right.
So where do scrums come in? Because if you completely eliminate the scrum, there's no need for...
Forward pass.
Okay.
Restarts.
You could still... Yeah, forward...
Take it from penalties.
Forward pass and, yeah, use it as a penalty weapon.
You know, it does...
I'd love to see the scrum being used more as a penalty weapon in order to run back moves off it.
Yeah.
Because it hardly ever is, unless a team is really dominant and they don't run a backs move, they'll just scrum, penalty try.
And if you change the pace of the game and decrease it, someone who, if you have a really powerful scrummager, their value is going to go right up again, because it'll be premium, it'll be real premium. If you've got a guy that can be athletic and
I wonder
scrummage.
If you're going to get more Taburns. Taburns?
Tigburns.
Tigburns. Hang on, is that the right guy?
Tig Furlong.
thank you. Who is a great scrummager, but primarily a ball carrier?
He does that. Tyburn does everything.
Yeah, he would actually. But that's probably a bad example because he does do everything. But this will reduce size of players. It has to.
Yeah, it would.
It has to.
Mm.
That's a little... I quite enjoyed going down that wormhole. I didn't expect to, but there you go.
So it's one we've not actually discussed for probably at least six months, maybe longer.
Well, we'll wait for the next ridiculous review when they... you're only allowed to use one arm to tackle.
I know what we should do to follow that. We should go to... We should get outraged now. As we should get really outraged, gents.
Go on.
No.
Okay.
And go to a red card report.
Yes! Hang on. Let me just wait.
Oh. Go on.
Oh. It's still going. Sorry, you're still outraged from the first
game. What about that? Send him off!
Oh, no,
send
the effects going now.
Take the psycho music out.
I can't. What's it start?
You can't stop it.
Oh, what about that? Send him off! Send the drinking age up! Get him off the field! That was diabolical! Get him off the field! That's just typical what it is!
Smooth, slick that.
Are we going to get nominated for another audio and radio industry award this year on the basis of that?
Clearly with that.
Well, no, because there's not a major terrorist incident outside. That's what we need. The only way to win one of those awards is if you happen to be on the scene of a terrorist incident or a natural disaster.
Red card report.
Sorry, here we go. Terrorist incidents and natural disasters combined.
Yeah. This is, thank you. At Rugby Podcast, if there's ever a red card or an outrageous incident in your game, we want to know about it so we can shame the individuals and get on Mount Pius about how awful it is.
Terrible.
Well, it's not a red card as such, the main talking point for this.
No, but it's certainly a social red card.
Well, yeah, certainly frowned upon in social circles, from my experience.
And this comes from Stroud Rugby Club. Ooh. Well, it doesn't actually come from Stroud Rugby Club. It seems like Stroud Rugby Club were, on first glance, the perpetrators of something quite heinous. Who were they playing against? Who was that team?
I don't know, actually. I have heard this story and I've seen the evidence and it's disgusting, quite frankly.
So, old something. Anyway, it was a West Country game. Phil will work
Chosen
out.
Hill FP.
Chosen Hill, that's it. Chosen Hill, which is based around Bristol.
I'm not being funny. Chosen Hill sounds like one of the nicest private schools in California, doesn't it? It sounds like, you know, you would spend a couple of million quid on a house in Chosen Hill. And your kids go to school there and they become Hollywood executives.
Well, that's not what we're hearing. We're hearing that they are a tough team to play. Let's put it...
The chosen ones?
No, not the chosen ones, Stroud.
Allegedly.
No, aren't Chosen Hill meant to be the ones that...
Oh, who are the perpetrators here? Who are the perpetrators?
Well, no. Stroud was a reaction to playing against Chosen Hill, wasn't it?
No, it was Chosen Hill... Yeah. Tweeted a picture of the dressing room that Stroud Rugby left.
Yes, and Stroud Rugby left a dirty protest behind in the changing room. On the tiled floor, someone had pinched a loaf on the floor and left it.
That's horrible. That is one of the most horrible things I don't think I've ever come across.
Yeah, I mean, it's not quite... A football fan slashing the face of another one with a knife, as it happened with Millwall Everton. But it's in rugby terms, that's a pretty unsavoury incident.
Yeah, I've never heard of anything even remotely similar. Have you?
No.
Tim?
No.
Bubbling?
I guess that is kind of... I mean, that's your own...
Yeah,
mouth.
That's yourself.
Yeah. No, that doesn't really harm anyone else.
Can I just suggest you put safe search on if you want to find out what bubbling is? Just safe search on if you're at work.
Do not search at work for a start.
Who was the rugby player that got...
It was a rugby league player in Australia.
Australian rugby league player.
It wouldn't surprise me if this was an Australian rugby league player.
So yeah, Stroud allegedly left a dirty protest on the floor of the dressing rooms at Chosen Hill. But I thought we heard from our sources that Chosen Hill were a...
Stroud were allegedly quite tasty.
Oh, okay. I apologise, Chosen Hill. I do apologise. But yeah, we've heard from other sources that Stroud can be challenging to play against, I'll put it like that.
There's nothing wrong with being challenging to play against.
I mean, Abrasive is always very good.
I played a game this week against West Park St Helens. Tough bunch of boys, beat us fair and square. I was convinced that I was bit on the back of the neck, and I was also kneed in the face four times by their hooker while scrimmaging. So, you know, you do get...
While scrimmaging?
Yeah. So
God, he's got some flexibility.
What sort of position did you get yourself into?
I was tight prop.
So, you still got some...
You must have been hinging at the waist on that.
It is literally the most stupid thing to do, because you can never hurt someone, because you can't really get any purchase through the knee. So I'm just getting this, like, fat, hammy leg, like, softly into my face. I'm thinking, this is ridiculous, because if anyone sees you, you're getting an instant red. Like, there's no damage, and there's all the downside to it. And then I'm not going to say definitively I got bit on the back of the neck, but it certainly felt like someone was nibbling my neck. I thought, oh, God damn it!
Not seductively.
No, it wasn't. So yeah, it's one thing being tough to play.
Do they know your JB?
No idea.
From Egg Chasers.
No idea.
The JB.
There must be players you've played against who know.
Yeah, Birkenhead has played.
You've seen our download numbers. They must know.
About 1/5 of Stephen Jones's apparently.
1/5, 1/100th.
Well, yeah, 1/100th. Yeah,
is that what he says?
Oh yeah.
All right.
Half a million subscribers, mate.
Yeah,
they must have more than 500,000 subscribers if we're only 1/5 of their numbers. So. Yeah. Anyway,
crazy. Yeah. I played against Birkenhead Park once, and someone told me to stick to podcasting, and he probably had a good point. I wasn't playing particularly well. I tend not to advertise the fact when I'm playing for obvious reasons.
But they know you play for Top H, and they know who they're playing.
Yeah, Yeah, the mighty Toc H is in the northwest now.
Yes. Oh yeah, Byron was certainly saying how mighty they were.
He's terrified. He's terrified.
If you haven't listened to it already, listen to our Six Nations podcast featuring Byron McGuigan, who is a rival head coach of a northwest rugby side, and there was some beef. They be beefing. That's all I'll say.
Exactly.
Anything else to cover off in domestic terms?
Not from the red card report, no. But if you do have any red card in the instance, let us know ASAP.
It was a relatively red card light weekend, except for Renato Bothmer.
Oh yeah, he got a red card.
I didn't see
it. Something, but I don't know what for.
For Quinns.
I like him. I think he's a really, really good player.
Abrasive.
Can he needs hard to runner. He needs to lend his arm guards to Billy Vunipola.
Bosh.
Just look, and maybe, look after you know, Billy's arms.
Maybe he had it coming. Because if you write smash on your arm guard, maybe.
Well,
concuss.
You're just a big fan of pre-packaged mashed potato.
Exactly right. Exactly right. Hey, hell of a sponsor.
should we go and have a life?
Yeah. Have we got anything else to cover off? I feel like...
10 to midnight on a Sunday.
And no NFL to look forward to.
I think we've covered everything. You're not watching the Royal Rumble?
Is it on tonight?
I think so. Yeah, there was something on Twitter.
Oh, I like the Phil backtracking. Is it always on tonight? Oh, I think so.
It's on Twitter.
I might have seen something earlier.
But Phil, sure. You don't have Twitter.
Always lurking. Always watching.
Excellent. Well, there you go. A special expert edition of the Egg Chasers Rugby podcast for your midweek commute.
Yes. So there you go. There's domestic rugby this weekend, blah, blah, blah. Whatever. I don't know. I don't know what's going on. Six Nations. Enjoy Six Nations.
Did we actually do our predictions for the Six Nations? Are we going to do a pre-Six Nations podcast when the teams are out, which
yeah,
will be Thursday night.
Oh, but my God. Triple download numbers. Get in.
That's only valid for one day.
Get me that download cash. Yeah, fine.
Should we do that?
Oh, I know what I'm going to say. To finish the podcast, get yourself... fill your life up with as much toxic masculinity as four quid can get you.
Oh, yes.
Become a horrible human being and buy a razor that isn't a Gillette one. Joking. No, obviously, we love Cornerstone razors, and we love razors that will not try and make you feel like you should hand over your penis in exchange for it.
No, in fact, you can get an extra weighty shaft.
Yes, JB, an extra weighty shaft. So ignore the Cornerstone identity politics and, well, any politics of any nature. It's a flipping razor. It's a flipping razor. The most important thing is, how does it shave your face? Cornerstone razors shave your face incredibly well, better than any we've had. And because you listen to us, you get an amazing offer. You get a weighty aluminium shaft with your initials engraved on it. I was joking about the other stuff, by the way, just to be clear. I was joking. Clearly joking.
Yeah. Tell your HR department that.
Cornerstone.co.uk.
Egg Chasers HR department.
Yeah. Cornerstone.co.uk/egg. It's cornerstone.co.uk/egg. Or...
Egg 10 at checkout.
Six amazing Cornerstone razors in a presentation box with a weighty aluminium shaft, which you get for free, initialled with your initials, because you listen to us. Get involved.
Well done.
Are we still doing any spoke advertising?
No. Why? Do you want a new pair of trousers?
They were very nice.
They are very nice
trousers. They were lovely.
one of my favourite sponsors. I mean, I've got... Actually, my favourite sponsor was Leo Vegas by Country Mile. you know, I'd like some more spoke trousers if you're listening.
They were very good.
Yep. Such a good fit.
Yeah, lovely fit.
They were an incredible fit. I wore some at the weekend.
Right, let's
wrap
it up.
Okay.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Here's a question for the marketers listening. Want to find that perfect customer beyond the world of scrolling, swiping, and searching? Here's a secret to make sparks fly. Smooth talking with podcast ads. With Acast, you can reach millions of listeners who'll be hanging on your every word. On the train to work, in the gym, or waiting in line for coffee. Start up the conversation with podcast listeners anywhere and everywhere. And they're looking for love. 60% of listeners have a higher trust in brands they've met on podcasts compared to social. Get closer to your audience. Make podcast ads with Acast. Head to go.acast.com. mintmobile.com/closer to get started.